Ron Paley has spent his career nurturing Winnipeg's jazz scene, and now the community is stepping up to build and sustain its future. The brand new Ron Paley Jazz Scholarship Fund is launching to support jazz students at the University of Manitoba's Desautels Faculty of Music, and the campaign kicks off at the Ron Paley Tribute Concert at the Burton Cummings Theatre on May 23rd. This celebration marks the start of a fund designed to help young musicians access the training, mentorship, and opportunities Ron has championed for decades. Your donation keeps that momentum going and helps the next generation find their voice. Whether you're joining the kickoff concert or supporting from home, you can donate today at give.umanitoba.ca/Ron Paley. Help fuel the future of jazz and keep Ron's impact growing. Proudly supported by UMFM 101.5.
Are you an artist, band, or record label? We want you to send us your music so we can put it on the radio. Not only this station, but stations across Canada. Check out earshot-distro.ca and share your music with more than 100 radio stations and programmers across the country. Earshot Distro is made by and for the campus community radio sector to help emerging musicians. Uploads cost $7 per song or $50 per album. Learn more at earshot-distro.ca.
This is your host, Gareth Rice, and you're listening to Canadiana Suite on UMFM 101.5 radio station. This is a radio program primarily dedicated, but not limited to, highlighting the works of the many talented Canadian jazz artists on the scene today. You just heard Alicia Biro's tune Running From Nothing from her debut EP of the same name, and she's a singer-songwriter, producer, and piano player based in Los Angeles. Originally from Vancouver Island, she takes influence from a wide array of genres such as pop, folk, and jazz within her expressive writing and playing style, collaborating with artists such as Larry Goldings, Alex Bone, Adrian Balia, and Jay Belarus. Once again, her debut EP, Running From Nothing, is currently out now, and she'll be performing here at the Winnipeg Jazz Festival on June 18th, 7 p.m. at the Fort Garry Hotel. So before the interview, we're going to play a wide mix of stuff, starting with Nora Jones' Sunrise from Feels Like Home, Madison Cunningham's Invisible Chalk from her newest record, Ace, The Bros Landreth's Half of Me from Dog Ear, Wyatt Waddell's Ain't No Stuntin' from The Understudy, Joni Mitchell's Coyote from Hey Jira, which Ari and Larry are also playing at the Jazz Festival, Julian Lage with Wordsmith from his record Modern Lore, The Beatles with I've Just Seen a Face from Help, Lizzie McAlpine with Spring into Summer from Older and Wiser, and Alicia Biro's Gentleman Blue from Running from Nothing.
Sunrise, sunrise, looks like morning in your eyes, but the clock's held 9:15 full hours. Sunrise, sunrise, couldn't tempt us if it tried, 'cause the afternoon's already coming gone. And I said, who?
Slow. Jeff to get so drunk and leave me on that way. You just picked up a hitcher, a prisoner on the white lines on the freeway. I looked a coyote right in the face on the road to Belgeny near my old hometown. He went running through the whisker weed, chasing some prize down, and a hawk was playing with him. Coyote was jumping straight up and making passes, and those same eyes just like yours under your dark glasses, privately probing the public rooms, peeking through keyholes and numbered doors, where the players lick their wounds and take their temporary lovers and their pills and powders to get them through this passion play. No regrets, Coyote, I just get off a bogey. You just pick up a hitcher, prisoner on the white lines on the freeway. Coffee shop. He's staring a hole in his scrambled eggs. He picks up my scent on his fingers while he's watching the waitress's legs. He's too far from the Bay of Fundy, from Appaloosas and Eagles and Tides, and the air-conditioned cubicles and the carbon ribbon rides are spilling it out so clear. Either he's gonna have to stand and fight or take off out of. I tried to run away myself, to run away and wrestle with my ego. This flame you put here in this Eskimo, in this hitcher, in this prisoner of the fine white lines, of the white lines on the free.
I've just seen her face. I can't forget the time or place where we just met. She's just the girl for me, and I want all the world to see we've met. Had it been another day, I might have looked the other way, and I'd have never been aware. But as it is, I'll dream of her tonight. Falling, yes, I am falling, and she keeps calling me back again. I have never known the like of this. I've been alone, and I have missed things and kept out of sight. But other girls were never quite like this. Falling, yes, I'm falling, and she keeps calling me back again. Falling, yes, I'm falling, and she keeps calling me back again. I've just seen her face, I can't forget the time or place where we just met. She's just a girl for me, and I want all the world to see we've met. Falling, yes, I'm falling, and she keeps calling me back again. Falling, yes, I'm falling, and she keeps calling me back again.
in a body that's lived 62. She's wearing pearls and laughing in her vintage shoes. Dressed as one for born and shrunk and pale. Don't think I've ever seen somebody so cool. No, she's not. Become someone she admires. And maybe while her smile lines are painted gold, she's no longer afraid of growing old. No, she's not. Friends with all the time that's passing. She's a color in a faded room. I hope I'm gonna be like you.
Think of your children pledging allegiance to the maple leaf. Mayonnaise on everything. Winter, 11 months of the year. Anne Murray, all day, every day.
CJUM FM 101.5, running on 100% Canadian volunteer power.
Joining us is Alicia Bureau, a singer-songwriter, producer, and piano player based in Los Angeles. Originally from Vancouver Island, she takes influence from a wide array of genres such as pop, folk, and jazz within her expressive writing and playing style, collaborating with artists such as Larry Goldings, Alex Bone, Adrian Valia, and Jay Belarus. Her debut EP, Running From Nothing, is currently out now, and she'll be performing here at the Winnipeg Jazz Festival on June 18th, 7 p.m. at the Fort Garry Hotel. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. I guess we'll start with the question of all questions. What got you into music and, by extension, you know, singing and the piano?
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up in a very music-filled home, so I think music was always such a big part of my childhood. My dad was always playing records in the living room, so I'd wake up all the time to different music, and I think a lot of that early music was a lot of the influences that you had mentioned, like a lot of folk music and jazz, and a lot of the records that really were foundational elements, I think, for me and my influences. And so I think, you know, just singing with my family, my sister, and that kind of thing made me fall in love with it. And then I grew up playing classical piano and classical cello for a while. And I think I just fell in love with that kind of expression, so that when I really started to turn towards loving jazz and writing music when I was about 13, I think all those influences just naturally came into play in my writing. And so I can thank my family for a lot of it.
Yeah, definitely. It's like, you know, the records are right there. You just put them on and it's like you're, you know, off to the races. So what were some of those records that you checked out?
Yeah, I think a lot of them were traditional jazz records. Like there was a lot of Miles Davis or Bill Evans, Hometown Hero, Diana Krall, Nora Jones. So everything from that to, you know, Peter, Paul and Mary and Joni Mitchell. So it was a big contrast, you know, everything from that to 80s pop music and, you know, more modern stuff as well. And so it was a big contrast, but definitely a lot of jazz.
Yeah. Just out of curiosity, what's your favorite Joni Mitchell record?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'd say the one I've listened to the most this year is the 2000s version of Both Sides Now.
Oh, yeah.
Which I kind of have fallen in love with. I think there's just the string arrangements and the production are incredible. And I love that record.
Yeah. I've been checking out Hey Jira. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And then like Fred Hirsch has so many great arrangements of like Joni Mitchell tunes. So good. Yeah. And in terms of like when you're doing classical, like what kind of pieces were you playing, like on cello or on piano?
Well, I grew up doing the Royal Conservatory program. And so that kind of involved playing pieces from, you know, all different eras. But I think my favorite was probably playing Romantic era and Impressionist things. I loved playing Chopin and Debussy. I think those were some of my favorites. And probably now it makes sense because I think I loved a lot of that rich, complex harmony. And I just think it's so beautiful.
Yeah, and I feel like you can kind of trace it back to like singing because there's a lot of like Lieder and a lot of romantic stuff, like with Schubert and Debussy and stuff.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
Like textures, yeah. And in terms of like those jazz records, like what are some of your favorite jazz records just in general?
It's so hard to pick and I feel like it changes all the time. But definitely one of the ones that was really foundational for me, is Night Train by Oscar Peterson. I just think the bluesiness in that is just incredible. And I was just so personally inspired by everything in that record. So that's definitely one that sticks out for me. And I think for my childhood too, probably one of the first Nora Jones records as well is just one of those ones that I listened to a million times when I was a kid. So I think that kind of was a very influential record for me as well.
Yeah. I feel like Night Train's kind of underrated because everyone kind of like, you know, treats it like it's already good, but it's like, it's such a great record. If you listen, go back and listen to it, there's so many great things. It's like so popular. It kind of eclipses everything else. It's crazy.
Yeah, well, deserves to be popular. It's such a
That's true. Yeah. So would you say that your kind of transition into more like singer-songwriter stuff, was that like a natural fit for you? Were you thinking about that when you were, you know, studying at, like in Vancouver and stuff? Or was it more of like a thing that kind of was born out of listening to jazz and listening to records?
Yeah, I think when I first started writing, it was before I had really delved into jazz as a genre and really had been learning it. So I think that naturally my early writing was kind of drawing on it, but I didn't really have that wealth of, you know, all that language and harmony that comes from jazz in my music yet. Mm-hmm. But I definitely was still influenced by it, but I think naturally the first songs that I was writing were still in that kind of pop format of being verse chorus. Right. And so I think that naturally that was the starting point. And then as I fell in love and kept, you know, influencing my music more with jazz, I think that it was kind of that way as a natural progression that the harmony just became more involved in it as I went along, and naturally more of the influences kind of started getting integrated into it.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's like, you can go really into jazz harmony, but sometimes it might not serve the song. So is that like something that you think about a lot, where it's like you can, you know, have a huge spread voicing, or you can kind of like strip it down, but it makes more room for the voice, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. I think my approach with all of my music is to try and be as tasteful with it as I can. You know, I feel like trying to approach it with just because you can do something or doesn't necessarily mean it's the right choice for the music. And I think for my music, you know, I really like just having a tasteful approach with it and kind of saying what you can in as little as you can. And so, yeah, I definitely think it's a combination, but for sure.
Yeah, and it, like, depends on, like, situations and stuff. Like, you know, it's definitely, like, songs, you know, like, Just the Way You Are. Like, I think, is it Phil Woods on that? He, like, shreds on a solo, and it's, like, really tasteful. Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of fun, because if you start from a point of being really tasteful and kind of a few words, then I feel like it kind of leaves so much opportunity that then if I'm in a situation live where I feel like taking it here or taking it there, it kind of leaves all that opportunity to take it wherever you want to.
Yeah, definitely. And like in terms of like the texture of your voice, like what do you actively try to convey when you're like thinking about those kind of things? Like when you're practicing like stuff? Cause I feel like you've got like a very like specific like voice, like vocal range, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know if I necessarily am always considering the texture itself, but I definitely try and I think I like to sing sort of in that alto range. And I think that's something that has always connected with me and been something that I enjoyed about my voice. So I feel like I really enjoy doing songs where I can kind of let that be sort of the range that it sits in and let that be a moment. But yeah. So I definitely, I think I consider it, but it's kind of a variety for sure between the music. So
yeah, definitely. And I guess you probably combine it a lot with like, you know, lyrics and, you know, phrasing and stuff and, you know, syllabic stresses and that sort of thing. So when you were thinking about like, I guess the record, can you kind of detail your process of thinking about, you know, how am I going to think about, you know, building this track or thinking about what the overall kind of vibe is going to be like, you know? Yeah,
I think it was a process of, because I had a few years before, because obviously this being my first EP that I've put out, I think it took me a while of kind of discovering where I wanted this music to sit and in what kind of sonic world and how much of each of my influences. And I was writing such different music and I was learning to produce. And I think that it was really special to kind of try a bunch of different worlds and see what felt right. But I think kind of what ended up feeling really natural was kind of coming back to this organic world to center it around and having this kind of jazz trio be the center of everything. So everything sort of around those organic sounds and having real instruments and having it be completely presentable as you would do it live, but then kind of adding elements around that. And that kind of sonic world I think was fun and also paid homage to so much of my influence from, you know, from jazz and different genres and kind of combining that in. But then also I think it kind of allows for freedom of expressing different influences as well within the pop world and allowing for that as well.
Yeah, because I feel like there's a lot of interesting like rhythmic hooks or really cool like layering, you know, with like Gentleman Blue. There's like the Rhodes and the piano, and it's like a kind of very bright, you know, sound. And there's like that, you know, opening hook. That's really cool. So like, what were you thinking about when you were writing like that tune or just all those little parts of the, you know, like with Running From Nothing or, you know, there's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, no, thank you. I think it's definitely a fun thing to stack keys sections and kind of let them have their own worlds because they're so different and kind of can capture such different sonic ranges and that kind of thing. So, I mean, definitely with Just Wait a Minute and Gentleman Blue, I think those I both started on a Wurlitzer and then we ended up kind of looking at whether we wanted certain parts to be piano or Wurlitzer or Rhodes. And it's so fun when you have the opportunity to kind of play with those sounds and see what feels really good. And it's so fun to be able to stack those different things. It makes me wish I had four hands so I could play both at the same time.
Yeah.
But But yeah, so I mean, definitely that was really fun, and it was great to just consider all those arrangement aspects, and it's such a fun part of being in the studio and getting to explore how you want everything to be arranged.
Yeah, definitely. Like with the band too. Like I saw that Larry Goldings was on it, which is crazy.
Yeah, that was a crazy one for me. He's incredible. With Fool's Gold, to be able to do that live off the floor and play with such incredible musicians, I think does nothing but raise your own musicianship. And yeah, it was very, very inspiring to play with such incredible people that I have so much respect for and have listened to so much of their music. So working with all of them was very special to me.
Yeah, definitely. There's one part in Running From Nothing I want to talk about. There's like a kind of a D-flat/E-flat inversion, then it goes to F, and then there's like a C to like B-flat. There's like a bunch of triads. It reminded me a lot of Jacob Mann, like how he writes. So like, how did you think about that part in that song?
I just want to make sure, are you talking about the sax solo kind of solo section?
Yeah, that part.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was actually a really fun section I looked at with Alex, the saxophone and producer I was working with, who's incredible. Mm-hmm. And it was really fun to just, I knew I wanted to have this kind of solo section. So we were looking at how we wanted to do that. And it was so fun to put the solo section into it. And it was kind of a fun part too, because the rest of the song is still kind of in... It was a fun opportunity to kind of step out a little bit harmonically and kind of put a couple little like moments in there, you know. But yeah, it was really fun to do that, and I definitely have to give Alex credit for working on those sax sections as well, and writing that little section together. But yeah, it's fun to do it live too, because then I just played a little solo section in the piano.
Yeah, it sounded great.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I guess the lyrics for Running From Nothing, it kind of follows the, I kind of got a vibe that it's like very upbeat harmony, but the lyrics are pretty depressing, which I thought it was depressing, but maybe you thought it was upbeat. So what were you thinking about when you were writing those lyrics?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, I always do think it's interesting when you have like a bit of a juxtaposition between harmony and lyricism.
Yeah.
But I think it's kind of a mix for me. I think it came originally from a sort of more questioning and probably darker place of just considering, you know, just so many things that I have overthought and, mm-hmm. you know, worrying about the small things and, you know, whether that's in music or life or your career or anything. But also on the flip side, it really is this kind of letting go, and it's sort of like an exhale for me. In fact, I mean, whenever I do the show or the song live, I have a line that's shoulders release, and I quite literally use it as a reminder to like relax in my show whenever I sing that line.
Yeah.
But I think for me, it really is overall a more positive meaning for me, even though it comes from kind of that place. It was sort of my reminder to myself that, just floating on this rock, but in a good way that, you know, not to worry so much about the little things and be so appreciative for all the time. And it kind of ties into Gentleman Blue and all these ideas of, you know, growing and getting to experience life is such a privilege, and getting to experience that is a great thing. And to try to focus on the bigger picture and not all those little things that don't matter.
Yeah. Cause I feel like Gentleman Blue, it's like a very, you know, not bleak way of looking at like aging and, you know, people, you know, our age, it's like, they're so afraid of, you know, growing older. It's like, it's kind of creepy, but
yeah. And there's such a, especially with social media and advertising and everything, there's such a thing on, oh, everyone needs to, you're only like, your worth is your age and being young and everything, which mm-hmm. we don't have to look at it that way. Like, we can just decide that growing is a privilege and respect, you know, that growth. And, you know, I mean, what a pleasure and privilege that is, that we get to grow and experience life. And that was definitely a thing that I wanted to flip on myself, because for sure within music and, you know, a lot of these kinds of careers, it's very like, oh, you have to, you know, or within any career, really, like, oh, have I achieved this thing by this age? Or, you know, and that comes in so many, in so many forms. But I think that was really a reminder to myself that, yeah, it's, we're lucky to get to grow and experience life. And, you know, looking at this lady, I was just thinking like, wow, it's, I think it'll be fun. I get to just be like that when I'm older.
Yeah, definitely. It's like, you know, it's a privilege to age and, you know, get more experience out of life.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So I guess when you're talking about a lady, I guess, was it someone you saw like on the street?
Well, actually, it's really about my mom.
Okay, yeah.
And I had spent my birthday with her and a group of friends, and she was just having a great time, and all my friends love her. And it was kind of, I mean, I think it's a bigger picture idea of kind of finding someone older in your life that you're inspired by and someone that kind of helps you see the version of you that you could be when you're older, and letting that not be such a scary thing.
Yeah, definitely. And also, I think, wait, where is it? Oh yeah, in terms of like building a tune from like using a variety of influences, like what's the most important thing, like from a large or like small scale perspective? Like what texture things like work or what don't work over time, you know, like with reverb or like using, you know, like you said, harmony that doesn't serve the melody. Like how would you think about that in terms of production, to be more specific?
Yeah, so specifically about like what textures are kind of most important to me when I'm writing?
Yeah, especially in that kind of like singer-songwriter poppy kind of vibe. Because I feel like you can kind of strip it down, but you can't overcrowd the mix too much.
For sure. And I think that's partially why when I'm writing, I love to start from a really focused point, you know, and often that is writing just at a piano or at a guitar, because I feel like, you know, good music is often in a great position when you can enjoy it at its, you know, its finest point, which is, you know, not to say that's always how it should start. But I think often for me with my writing, I often start from, you know, just that kind of point and then kind of slowly creating layers out and out to kind of see and play with what textures it feels like it still needs, you know, and trying not to give it too much, but just that kind of amount that is beneficial for the song. And of course that depends on the song too, but yeah, and it kind of allows it to be in a fun place when I'm performing live as well, because it means that, you know, you can have it with all these layers, but then sometimes you can just see how can I strip this down to just on piano or in a trio format and kind of have that flexibility with this, which is really fun. But I think, it's hard to pick on the most important elements for me, just because, I don't know, it depends on the song too. I think lyrically, the concept of everything always has, something that's important to me. And I try my best to kind of reflect that with the production and the harmony of the song as well. It usually starts from a concept.
Yeah, definitely. And in terms of like, I guess tunes like, Wish I Were Better, like what's involved in like making simple harmony sound necessary to the song, especially as a singer? Because I feel like there's some songs where it's like the harmony, it just feels very like surface level, but there are some songs where it's like the harmony, it's like really simple, but it feels beautiful. It feels like it needs to be in the song.
Yeah, I think it comes back to that kind of idea of trying to start things from a tasteful place or a place of simplicity. I think for me, especially with a song like that, which for me is just trying to be very raw and soul bearing about something. Yeah. And so it feels like more exposing almost if that's put in a place that's very simple harmonically. It's like, even in the bridge sort of where it's starting to shift, that's where it gets more complex, because it's almost like you're almost trying to hide it within something. Right. But then the end where it's exposed again kind of comes back into that simplicity again, which is something I kind of wanted to have in that song just because it's so raw lyrically and emotionally for me. So yeah, I think there's a simplicity I tried to keep in that one, but then still trying to have some of those just kind of notes next to each other and kind of have a little bit of that tension in there as well. Yeah.
What are some of your favorite covers to do that with? Like that same kind of philosophy, like when you're just singing tunes?
Well, in this year I've been doing a cover of Both Sides Now, which I think is kind of a fun version to do that with, because I was quite inspired by that 2000s album, and I think it kind of, a lot of it is just this rotating over the same kind of harmony and just kind of sifting and sitting there, so that when you do kind of have a moment of release, it feels so satisfying because you've just been sitting and allowing it to be in this same place for so long. So definitely that'd be an example for me.
Yeah, especially since the melody is so like very intervallic. It doesn't move very much, so you can do a lot with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And also, just veering off way out of proportion, you're also well known for, you know, transcriptions. So, like, how did that start?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I think it was very early on in me starting to post things on social media that I started doing the transcription videos. And I'm so glad that it's connected with people for a couple of reasons. I mean, A, I think it's such a great way that I can pay respect and show how much, you know, I've been influenced by different artists and different, so many different incredible jazz musicians. Mm-hmm. On one hand, B, it keeps me practicing. It keeps me learning new transcriptions, which is great. What a great excuse to do it for. And, so it's definitely fun for me, and it's a great way to kind of show my practicing as well. And it's also been really cool just to meet people and from so many different backgrounds and who have seen it, and kind of to chat about their relationship with music or jazz and soloing. And also some people who have no, you know, I've had people come up to me and be like, I don't know what a transcription is, but I like it, you know? Yeah. And I think that's cool to be able to hopefully introduce people to maybe something that they wouldn't have been aware of, or, you know, in whatever capacity that is. I think it's really cool. And I mean, it's kind of fun for me because I don't really, you know, some of these solos are kind of fast and up tempo and that kind of thing. And it's not really the kind of approach that I take in my own soloing. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of a fun opportunity to express that and have fun with that kind of part of improvisation and learn from it as well, even if it's, you know, completely different from the approach that I take in my own soloing.
Yeah, because I feel like you can kind of look at it from a large scale way of looking at it through, you know, how are they phrasing this? How is this going to, you know, resolve to the next section? So, like, do you feel like, you know, working on all these transcriptions, has it helped you kind of appreciate or, like, deepen your understanding of, like, song form or, like, phrasing or, you know, space, all that stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was one of the biggest things that helped me, I think, within learning jazz. I think especially for me, because classical music growing up you listen for sure to performances, mm-hmm. but I think especially being a kid and learning it, a lot of it was just kind of learning it from the page and absorbing things that way. So to learn a new art form that's, you know, very oral based and a lot to do with learning by listening and absorbing that way. Mm-hmm. I think it was so, so helpful for me and an incredible way to learn a new form of absorbing music and learning in a different way, which was really cool for me. And I think it's been hugely helpful for me to learn and be inspired and influenced by so many incredible people. You know, I think it's a lifelong journey of learning from so many incredible people. So it's definitely been super, super helpful for me and will continue to be.
Yeah, because, like, you know, you've transcribed a lot of stuff. You know, Oscar Peterson, McCoy Tyner, the Chick Corea solo on Spain. That's pretty crazy.
Oh, yeah. Like,
Pat Metheny. I love that solo on James. That's great.
That's a really cool one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely think it'll be fun too. I think I was thinking about the fact that it would be fun to kind of go through them all again and kind of revisit some of them. So I think I might do that.
And like, in terms of effectively transcribing, what are some strategies that you've used to help with, you know, speed or nailing down linear shapes, like repetitive Julian phrases? Because I know you said classical stuff, so that probably helps a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I think it helped, you know, with the technical facility side of things. And but yeah, I think some approaches, when I first started transcribing, I used to write everything out. But I think that was kind of me trying to have a classical approach with it, because then I ended up reading as well, rather than just like fully absorbing off the page. So now I just completely do it by ear. I sometimes will write it out just to kind of, because I think it's interesting to visually see it as well and be able to then look at certain sections or lines that you want to kind of work on more and do in different keys and kind of really take a deep dive into. Yeah.
You know, I guess you just got to shed.
Yeah. You know, it's a, like I said, it's lifelong learning. It's, I don't think one has ever learnt the piano or whatever instrument. It's, it's kind of that thing that the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know, which is such a cool thing. So I love learning. So
have you ever noticed a direct link between, I guess, transcribing, you know, someone like Iman Jamal or Oscar Peterson and how you kind of comp or how you play when you're doing like your songs?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that a lot of, it's added a lot of different tools that I can work with or different ideas of how to approach harmony or, you know, and not necessarily just in, you know, an improvisational aspect, but also I think in just looking at how you can have a passage shape or, you know, a melody movement or, I think all of that kind of also inspires me for whether that's my writing and my melodies or like you said, comping maybe just in a song of mine or not necessarily in a solo per se. So I think it definitely comes around in different ways than you'd expect as well.
Yeah. Like I guess you focus on the point of sound of like when you press a key and it's like, how much pressure should I put down? And it's like, if you're playing like Gentleman Blue, like you wouldn't like slam on the keys. Like you'd have like a kind of a baseline.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think it's fun experimenting, especially that with different musicians as well, because obviously all of their approaches to their instrument are going to be so different. Or say if I'm transcribing a saxophone player, that's obviously going to be interesting to see how you approach that on the piano or your own instrument. So it's interesting to experiment with that because, you know, I think I have a specific touch. I think I'm a lighter player in how I like to play. And so, yeah, it's cool to kind of experiment with that and go outside your comfort zone and see how those things might change your approach to some of your own songs in different ways.
Yeah. And has the computer transcribing helped with your typing?
Do you know, I actually feel quite lucky. I was such a nerd with typing games when I was a kid. I loved all those games where you would like the words would come down and you have to like type them before they get to the bottom. So that probably helped. I don't know. Maybe it's like combined with piano. Maybe piano helped my typing. I don't know. But it's actually so fun doing those computer solos. I had a, I think I came about because I was talking to Alex Bone and also a accordion player called Anatole.
No way, it's crazy.
Yeah, Anatole Mister. Yeah, because he does a lot of that stuff as well. So yeah, we were all hanging out and I think it came up then and I was like, oh, I should try doing it, because I'd never really, like, obviously you do it for production a bit, but like I hadn't really properly gone into the selling. I mean, it's quite fun. Obviously you can't get the you know, it's all the same dynamically, but it's it's so fun. I should do another one of those.
Yeah. Man, it's crazy you mentioned Anatole Mustard, because like, I'm a huge fan of his stuff. Like,
He's cool. I haven't seen him in a bit, but he's great. So
yeah. And the fact that you transcribed Chameleon on a computer.
it's so funny. And it's so unnatural the way the like keys are spaced and everything. So it's quite funny to spend the time on. And I'm sure you look, yeah, definitely. I think I did one on a on an airplane or at least I was practicing on it. I can't remember, but I remember the person sitting next to me being like, "What is she doing?" Just me, like, because of course you naturally too will want to hit the key harder to give it dynamics, even though you can't. So I imagine without headphones, it just sounds like someone's just whacking a keyboard next to you, you know?
Yeah, and then the fact that you also transcribed a piano while it was like sideways—that's crazy.
Oh, the one, sorry. Yeah, that was, I'm sure my piano teachers would be very displeased with such form, but.
Yeah, that's very much like a Domi and J.D. Beck thing. Like,
right, the, right.
Yeah, crazy. Yeah.
So funny.
Oh, yeah, is there a specific reason why you just kind of post like snippets of the solo and not instead of the whole thing?
I think it kind of depends. Honestly, sometimes it's because I will be like, oh, it's Monday. I should transcribe something for tomorrow. So sometimes I just actually haven't done the entire solo yet. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes it's just because sometimes I just think it's fun to kind of pick a snippet of it and kind of show that element. And, you know, people have short attention spans, unfortunately, as well. but you know, there's a few, I think, where I've posted the ball. Actually, another reason too is often with Instagram and social media platforms, you kind of have a limit on how much you can post of an official audio before it gets taken down.
Really?
So
I didn't know that.
At sometimes 30 seconds. So I often try and keep it within that so that it doesn't think I'm kind of using copyright because I'm using the audio in my video.
Yeah.
That's been annoying. Man.
Yeah, it's too bad, but like I think that limitation is kind of helpful because you can really focus in on like a really specific element that like, you know, grabs your attention and stuff. And that's what people do anyways.
It's true.
They transcribe elements of solos and put them in their own playing.
Yeah, for sure. Just focusing in on something that inspires you in that solo.
Yeah, definitely. And oh yeah, you mentioned I guess the LA scene in Vancouver. So like how has that kind of, you know, helped your development as a musician? Because I'm sure that there's like so many different great people in both scenes. Well, you
also
toured a lot too, so.
Yeah, I think I grew up in a really small town, and I also wasn't really involved in the music community there. I think partially just because I didn't know how one does music as a career. I just kind of practiced at home and that kind of thing. And I always used to sign up for a band and then drop it at the last minute. So, I think I always kind of early on was very introspective and kind of learning it on my own other than doing it with, you know, my family and my sister and that, and friends and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I think that going into a bigger music scene, and I think the first of that was, you know, a little bit of Vancouver, but mostly also, going to the UK, and I was in London for a while and then going to LA and just being around so many people that have put so much time and energy into their craft. It's very inspiring to be around. There's so many incredible musicians from all over the world here. And also so many people that, you know, kind of do a similar thing where they have a huge respect and background in, say, jazz or classical or other genres, and then kind of combine it with different influences. Or, you know, some of the best jazz players I know will have like pop gigs with big artists and that kind of thing as well. So it's kind of cool to play with so many people that have kind of these varieties of influences in sort of a similar way that I do as well.
Yeah. And I guess it helps with kind of sidestepping, you know, the genre, you know, conventions where it's like, oh, if you play jazz, you've got to play jazz the rest of your life, or you only play pop in a certain way. But it's like, if you see people who do both, it's like, you don't have to think about it, really. You just have to exist as yourself, as an artist.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm only being authentic to what I love and what I enjoy. And, you know, if that for you is solely one genre, then, you know, power to you. And that's amazing, you know.
Yeah.
But I think for me, I'm just so inspired by so many different things that I just didn't want to box myself into one specific thing and just allow myself to grow and see where that takes me, genre-wise or other.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, you know, if you want to shred, you can always shred, but you got to shred in a, you know, shredtastic way. I don't know where I was going with that, but you get the idea.
I like it.
Yeah. Random question, but do you know someone named Ilhan Safarali?
I do actually. Yes.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
I actually played a gig with him years ago, but, that would have been, I think, when I was maybe 17 or something. But
yeah.
But yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, oh, that's cool because he seems to know everybody on the scene. I interviewed him a while back because he's a record coming out.
Oh, incredible. Yeah. He's in New York, I think.
Yeah, he's in New York now.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
Nice. Oh, yeah. I really want to ask you this question. What's it like living with frogs?
Do you know, they're great. It's so silly. I mean, especially the one is... So I have one girl and one male, and the male croaks. So sometimes I will wake up in the middle of the night and it's like an alarm clock of this frog croaking, but which is very ridiculous. But I think they're great. They're great listeners.
Yeah.
they just hang out and they're just so, I like to say they're so vulnerable. And I kind of find that inspiring. They're just so, I don't know. I just think they're adorable and they just walk around and stare at you. One of them's really shy and hangs out at the back, and the other one kind of will come forward and like follow you around and look at you and put her feet on the glass and watch you. So it's kind of interesting, that they really do have different personalities. So, you know, that's why Flump has the social media presence and Clump likes to keep off the internet, you know?
Ah, yeah, that would make sense, yeah.
I'm fully aware how ridiculous it is, but I do love them. They're great.
Yeah. Are they easy to take care of? Like, I guess your apartment isn't probably like a whole jungle in and of itself. There's, you know.
I mean, I would love to at some point make a huge terrarium for them and just let them have the world. But yeah, it's actually very easy. I think the biggest thing for me was just spending the time to make sure they have everything they need in terms of, you know, temperature, humidity, and that kind of thing. But I think other than that, it's kind of just easier than probably having a fish. Like, it's just keeping them clean, and you change their water every day and, you know, feed them every couple of days. It's really simple, but I find very rewarding. So.
Right, because I guess they have like a specific texture of the skin, and too, like if they're in a good temperature, and they're pretty set.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing with them is that it's just taking the time to make sure they have everything they need. I think there's a lot of wrong information at pet stores and that kind of thing about what they need in terms of, you know, humidity, temperature, any of those things. So I think once you find that, then they're really easy and they're very, very sweet pets. So
yeah. What type of frogs are they?
They're White's tree frogs or Australian tree frogs.
Okay. Yeah.
So they like having sort of their home is like more tall than it is wide, so that they can kind of climb up and down. And
oh, that's cool. Have you ever tried sampling them for, you know, a production thing, you know, sampling or?
Do you know what? This is something that I've been talking about. I feel like there's got to be a world in which I can get like a little sample of them, put them in, because I think it would be so funny to have one of them on the credits of a song.
Yeah.
Just silly. But can you imagine having Flump as like auxiliary percussion or something? You know?
Yeah. Or just have it like a special guest, Flump.
And then no
elaboration whatsoever.
So silly.
Yeah.
I definitely try not, though. I think it'd be good.
Yeah. And also, like, there's, you know, definitely been a route from, you know, jazz pop. But have you noticed there's, I guess, has there been a shift from pop to jazz?
Generally within...
Yeah, I was wondering if you noticed any of that, because I've only really seen, like, you know, with Olivia Dean or, you know, Lizzie McAlphin or Madison Cunningham, it's mostly, like, jazz pop, but I've never really seen pop jazz. Is that a thing?
Ah, like kind of pop, but put in a very jazz format instead of like...
Yeah.
It's a good question. I feel like there's some people that do a really good job of sort of taking pop songs and putting them in a jazz world. I've seen that. I guess it depends on how you think about it, but I've definitely tried to do that a couple of times, like just with taking pop songs and putting them into a very jazz world, or I suppose there's like sort of postmodern jukebox-esque kind of versions of things, but I'm not sure if that's exactly what you mean.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm talking. I don't know exactly what I'm talking about, but it's an interesting concept for sure.
Well, it's. Yeah, absolutely. And it's always interesting to look at genres. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think there's so much of everything, and it's so cool to see how people take two genres and combine them in their own way and see how that inspires them. I think it's something really cool that I think has kind of, I've been seeing a lot over the last, you know, couple years, of just how people sit within, you know, take two or three or four genres and where you put yourself within that and how that influences you. I think it's really cool to see how people are inspired by different things.
Yeah, definitely. Speaking of which, what do you hope to convey with, you know, your merging of genres with your, you know, EP and when you come to the jazz festival?
Yeah, I mean, I hope that it's a kind of world where, you know, it's authentically inspired by jazz. So I hope that people who enjoy the jazz side of things, or maybe found me through the Transcription Tuesday side of things, will still hear that that influence is fully rooted in what I do. But also, maybe if you're someone who isn't necessarily a huge jazz fan or is scared by the word jazz, that maybe you can kind of find a world in which that kind of resonates with you as well. I think that it's going to be really, really fun. I'm super excited. I'm playing with a new trio there, and I'm just so excited. I've actually never been to Winnipeg, but my mom was born there, so I'm excited.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so excited to be there.
Yeah, you've got a nice room in there, nice acoustics, nice piano.
Incredible. Yeah. I'm so excited.
Yeah. Nice. And then you get to, you know, if you get time, you get to walk through all the parks because you've done, like, you know, nature stuff. So
absolutely. Do you have any recommendations?
Kildonan Park is pretty good. I'd recommend going down there. Yeah.
And then keep that in mind. Thank you.
Yeah. Nice. And there's also a great donut shop on Osborne called Crumb Queen. They're award-winning crullers. I'm just putting this out there, you know, for advertisement.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. They're great.
Very cool.
Yeah. Do you have any future gigs or any future projects coming up?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really excited. I'm doing a Canadian tour in June and a bit of the summer and playing some jazz festivals, which I'm super excited about. It's the first time I've done sort of a full tour in Canada, so I'm really excited about that, and to come and perform some of this new material as well as some unreleased music as well, which, you know, working on the first album as well. So so I'm very excited just to kind of show some of that and hopefully meet some people in person. I think one of my favorite parts of doing music is the connection with people and getting to just have that connection in person. So I'm just so excited and grateful that I'll get to do a bit more of that and hopefully meet some new faces and connect musically. So I'm really excited.
Yeah, and you can, you know, put a tip jar for anyone who mispronounces your name.
Listen, it's been a life journey of mispronunciations of my name. I can thank my mother for that, but at least it's unique, I guess.
Yeah. You know, it sticks out, then you can, you know, think about, you know, Greek mythology or something.
Exactly. Yep. I think it technically would make sense if someone said, like, Alicia or something like that. Yep. I wouldn't even second guess it, or, you know, it wouldn't even clock, because it just makes sense to me.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thanks again for the interview.
Yeah, thank you so much again. This has been lovely, and I'm really excited to be there.
Yeah. Are there any tracks from Running From Nothing you want to play it with for the show?
I think maybe Running From Nothing or Fool's Gold.
Yeah.
I think those two, maybe.
And just for posterity, out of all the transcriptions you've done, which, you know, tune that you've done from your transcriptions would you recommend people to check out?
Ooh, now that is a good question. Oh, there's so many good different ones. Well, bit of a cop-out, but I'll just say the very first one that I did, which was From Night Train, which is C-Jam, probably just because I think that as a starting point for me made me really inspired to do so many more. So I think, and there's so many great things to pull from that solo. I'm still revisiting all the time, so that was the start, so maybe I'll say that one.
Yeah, it'll be a nice bookend, you know, the start and then the end.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you almost had me convinced that you're somehow better than this.
take away the fine print, then you're all that you're left with. Your gold painted, you hide beneath the truth. You say I'm crazy, but I see straight through. So you take when you please.